Nearly all of the attention this political season has been on Donald Trump and Joe Biden and their race for president. In statewide races, the Gary Peters-John James battle for the U.S. Senate dominates the airwaves. But there are other equally consequential contests taking place. For voters living in Delta, Dickinson, and Menominee counties, it's time to decide who will be your 108th district representative in the Michigan House of Representatives. If you're still on the fence, stay tuned as we question 108th Republican incumbent candidate Beau LaFave and Democratic challenger Renee Richer. A candidate forum for the 108th House District is next on Media Meet. And I'm Mike Settles. Welcome to Media Meet and a candidate forum for the 108th District in the Michigan House of Representatives. The first half of today's program will feature a Q&A with Representative Beau LaFave, followed by a similar discussion with challenger Renee Richer. Republican Beau LaFave of the Iron Mountain is the 108th District's current representative in Lansing. Representative LaFave assumed office in 2017, and his current term ends December 31st. In August, he advanced from the Republican primary election, where he ran unopposed. Representative LaFave, thank you very much for joining us today and participating in this forum. For those that are not familiar with who you are and what you've been doing the last couple of years, let's start first with your background, your life experience, and why all of that has made you a good legislator.
Well, thank you very much for having me. It's an honor to be back on NMU's campus. My name is Beau LaFave, and it's my honor to be the state representative for Dickinson, Delta, and Menominee counties. I would say what got me interested in this job, let me go back just a second. I graduated from Kingsford High School and always knew that I wanted to come back home to the Upper Peninsula. I wanted to get my education and serve as a lawyer in the local area, whether it be prosecutor or defense attorney. So I went out to Michigan State, got my degree in international relations and political economy, and went to Wayne State University in Detroit, where I started pursuing my law degree. But the more I looked back at my hometown and the challenges that we were having, I realized that I had an opportunity to help. I saw the people that were my friends graduating from high school, they kept leaving the UP. And it wasn't to go get a good degree or to get a certificate and then come back. They were fleeing the Upper Peninsula because they couldn't find a good job. They couldn't get the salary they were looking for. They couldn't afford the high cost of car insurance prices. And they were fleeing across the Wisconsin border. So I decided at that point that my education was much less important to me than helping the people of my hometown. I decided to run for state representative, and I was successful. And since then, I've spent my career trying to keep people of the Upper Peninsula home and let their kids get high-paying jobs and reasonable car insurance prices.
What is it that makes you or will make you a better legislator than your opponent?
Well, I would say that one of the things that has been helpful for me is I've always wanted to be in the Upper Peninsula working. My opponent spent over a decade overseas in her field of study. I never wanted to leave the UP and don't plan on it. I've always wanted to work in the Upper Peninsula. I'm not coming back to the UP to retire and live out my, you know, the last part of my career in the state house. This is the beginning of my career. I want to set a building block for my generation and future generations of job creation and employment in the Upper Peninsula, not leave the Upper Peninsula a place where people just retire.
Let's move on to the issue that has just dominated all of our lives this year, COVID-19. Coronavirus cases, hospitalizations, and deaths are on the upswing right now in the state of Michigan, and the UP reportedly has the highest rate of new cases on a per capita basis. It seems like we're losing ground here. Is this a concern to you? And what can you do as a legislator to help bring this pandemic to an end?
It's very concerning that this virus is taking such a hold on us. I got COVID-19 a couple weeks ago, and I was okay. I have very mild symptoms, obviously self-isolated for the required 10 days and then another 5 days on top of it for a full 14 to make sure that I didn't put anyone in jeopardy. But this pandemic is here with us, and we need to learn to live with the virus. I would love to just go out there and kill the virus. I'm not sure that that is possible. What we need to do is learn how to live with it, make sure our hospitals aren't overwhelmed. Fortunately, they're not being overwhelmed. But as a legislator, what we need to do is manage the crises. And after the Supreme Court ruled that Governor Whitmer's executive orders were all unconstitutional, that's exactly what I did when I got out of quarantine. I went down to Lansing and got a bill on the governor's desk that dealt with nursing homes. So we're not going to take young people like me and quarantine them next to our older populations that are much more vulnerable. We need to make sure people can get their unemployment benefits. My office so far has handled about 1,500 people that needed unemployment benefits. We also had a bill that I voted for put on the governor's desk that'll open the offices. It'll open the Secretary of State's offices. Our grocery store employees have been working the whole time, but 10 days before the governor told us to go home, they told the SOS to go home. I also made sure, because people can't get in to the Secretary of State, they're driving on driver's licenses that are expired and tags that are expired. So we have a bill on the governor's desk that would forgive them. You don't need to get a driver's license renewal up until December 11th. And after the election, I believe we're going to push that farther forward. So a lot of things we've been working on.
You brought up the executive orders that were issued by the governor and now emergency orders through the Michigan Department of Health and Human Services. To protect public health, do you think it's appropriate for state government to control the comings and goings of citizens, limit capacities in schools and businesses, and require the use of face masks?
I think that it is appropriate for government to make rules of that nature during this crisis. I do not think it is appropriate for the governor to violate the Constitution in doing so.
Do you think it's the role of the legislature to enact any of those requirements?
Yeah, I think that would have been best if the governor had come to the legislature and asked us to make reasonable restrictions. You know, don't get me wrong, I love going to a Lions game, but I don't think necessarily during the heat of the pandemic, having 20, 50,000 people packed into that space with no distancing would be a good idea. I certainly could have found a way to get to that, but the governor decided to go another route and just do it on her own. And we've seen the disastrous consequences of not working with others. You know, she was quarantining young people with COVID and putting them next to our most vulnerable and elderly in nursing homes, and it led to the death of over 2,000 people. If she would have came to us and worked on these rules, we would have never let that happen, but we would have had much more sensible policy.
Let's talk a little bit about your role as a legislator and your participation. There are 23 permanent House committees established by House leadership, from agriculture and appropriations to education and health policy. What committees have you been serving on, and what is it that you bring to those committees?
Yeah, I actually serve on the most committees of any member in the House of Representatives. I'm currently the chairman of the Military, Veterans, and Homeland Security Committee. I'm also vice chairman of Judiciary. I serve on agriculture, two insurance committees, as well as oversight. What I bring to the table is UP experience, the common sense values of the people that I work for, the 90,000 people of my three counties. And more than that, I don't just work from Iron Mountain to Rapid River and down to Menominee. I bring Marquette values, Ironwood values, St. Ignace values. With 3% of the population, us UPers' voices get drowned out if we don't work together. So while I may only have 3/15 of the UP's counties, I represent the entire Upper Peninsula and bring what their common senses are to the legislature. And usually that entails the government not making a rule that I know darn well they can't enforce. If you can't enforce the rule, you shouldn't make it.
I want to touch base on what some people are concerned about may happen at the polls in a couple of weeks. It's been reported that there will be a crush of poll watchers and challengers that turn out at the polls to kind of monitor things, and that has raised some fears of voter intimidation. What are your thoughts on this, and how do we ensure that people are not deterred from going to the polls?
Well, number one is poll watching, independent monitors, making sure that the people that are voting aren't voting 3, 4, 5 times or lying about their name and who they are, has been a legal practice in this country since its foundation. Now, there's one particular party that's not very happy with that, and it's not the party that I belong to. I'm not sure why that is becoming an issue this time, But there is no reason anyone should be afraid of going to the polls. I am concerned today that the Secretary of State's office unilaterally decided that they were going to ban firearms in polling locations as an effort to suppress the vote of Republicans in rural areas. That I find much more concerning than somebody that's watching people as they get their IDs checked and making sure they are who they say they are.
Do you support no excuse absentee voting by mail?
Yeah, it's in our Constitution. That's certainly something that I couldn't do anything even if I wanted to. And especially during a pandemic, that seems to me to be a reasonable thing. What's not reasonable is the Secretary of State and the governor mailing out ballots to people who didn't ask for any. I think that's inappropriate. We haven't done that in Michigan, which is good.
You've touched on this a little bit, but I want to ask you more about it. It seems increasingly difficult for our elected officials to work across the aisle to develop sound legislation. What are your thoughts on this, and what steps can be taken, in your view, for Republicans and Democrats to work across the aisle and get legislation passed?
Well, first of all, as far as a UP lawmaker goes, my number one thing that I do every time I'm crafting legislation is I go to my Republican and Democrat colleagues from the Upper Peninsula and discuss it. And that means I have a great working relationship with Representative Cambenzi from Marquette. And I continue that type of mentality as I go south of the bridge to what we call the Northern Caucus. And I think, at least as far as the Michigan legislature go, it's usually not Republican versus Democrat. It's much more often that it is rural versus urban. And I don't mean urban in just Detroit. I also mean Grand Rapids and Lansing and all the other major cities. So it's much more often that it's the UP and Northern Michigan trying to stop bad legislation from city slickers than it is the Republicans fighting against the Democrats or vice versa.
So as one of four House representatives from the UP, how do you all make your voices heard among the 106 representatives of the Lower Peninsula?
Yeah, it's increasingly difficult. With term limits constitutionally enacted in 1992, we used to have the likes of Dominic Jacobetti and Joe Mack that were there for 20 years. They made them some more than that for one of them. And they made themselves a fixture of the institution. If you wanted something, if you want an appropriation done in your House district, you had to go into Dominic Jacobetti's office and ask him permission for that appropriation. That's not the case anymore. So it's very different. Term limits were created to stop upers from getting entrenched as they were in the system. So we're working against a system, we're working against a population issue. But what that means is it's coalition building. It is not only reaching across the aisle, but reaching on your own side of the aisle and building trust. And that's what I've done. People in Lansing know when I tell them I'm going to fight for an issue, and I tell them how bad it is for the people of the Upper Peninsula, I've heard it said when Bo gets a bone, he's not going to let it go. And that's exactly what I do. I don't always win the fight, but they know if something's going to hurt the UP, they're going to have a heck of a fight on their hands from the UP delegation, including myself.
We are just about out of time, but I want to give you a few seconds here to make a final appeal to your constituents.
It's been my honor to serve 4 years in the Michigan House of Representatives. I wanted to make sure that my constituents were able to get jobs in the Upper Peninsula and that high school students could get an internship at a local business and get high school credit. I accomplished that with House Bill 4106. I knew the high cost of car insurance prices were driving the people out of the Upper Peninsula, so I slashed car insurance prices for every Michigander. COVID-19 pandemic is a very trying and stressful time, but you have nobody, a stronger fighter for you in the Michigan House of Representatives than myself. I'm honored to serve for you every day, and I'd be honored to get your vote on November 3rd.
Representative Bo LaFave, thank you very much for joining us today on Media Meet. In just a moment, you'll hear from Representative LaFave's Democratic challenger, Renee Richer. Stay tuned as we continue with this candidate forum for the 108th House District.
There is no parallel for this election in 2020.
Trust is everything. There will be a respectful and fair exchange of ideas.
PBS has held a special place in people's lives. People trust us.
We need to understand what's going on. We need to go behind the story and under the story.
Not just to find out what happened, but why it matters.
2020 will be a political roller coaster, but viewers can count on PBS to be there every step of the way.
Welcome back to Media Meet. You've heard from Beau LaFave, the current 110th District Representative to the Michigan House, and now it's time to quiz his challenger. Renee Richer of Gladstone is the Democrat ready to unseat the Republican incumbent. Dr. Richer advanced from August's Democratic primary election, where she ran unopposed. Dr. Richer, thank you for coming to our studios today and being willing to answer our questions. The first one really isn't hard for me, but maybe for you it will be. Just tell us a little bit about yourself, your background, and what makes you think is in your background that would make you a good legislator.
Well, thank you so much for having me. I appreciate being here. I have deep ties to this community. I'm fifth generation Gladstone on the same farm. And my own personal background is in the sciences, in biology. So I live on the same farm where I was raised, and I pursue my passion in the biological field. I run a small business, and I also do a bit of environmental consulting. So I teach at the UW-Marinette, commuting from Gladstone, where I'm a biology professor. And I think what's really important is that allows me to bring 30 years of experience in analysis and problem solving to the legislature. And it's something that has been missing. And the result is that our policies aren't as efficient or as effective as they might be. So I'm really excited to head to Lansing and bring 30 years of professional experiences in the sciences to Lansing.
What was it that caused you to make that leap from the professional world into the political world?
Well, what I saw in my community was that there were a lot of opportunities that just weren't being pursued. So opportunities to improve access to healthcare, opportunities to improve education, and very, very importantly, opportunities to improve our management of substance abuse and mental health issues, which right now is really at the forefront.
What is it that you think would make you a stronger legislator than your experienced opponent?
Well, I have to say that, you know, there's more to being a legislator or a representative than simply writing legislation. And that's also advocating for the community, bringing new opportunities to the community. And again, it's my 30 years of experience in business, in the sciences, in human health sciences in particular, that really strengthens my candidacy. And I believe I have a lot to offer the district, and we'll be able to see improvements right away.
Let's talk about the issue of the year, okay. Unfortunately, which is coronavirus, COVID-19. Coronavirus cases, hospitalizations, and deaths are on the upswing throughout the state, and the UP recently reported the highest rate of new cases on a per capita basis. It seems we are losing ground. Is this a concern to you, and what can you do as a legislator to help bring this pandemic to an end?
Yeah, this is a very grave concern of mine, and it has been since the beginning. What we're seeing in the 108th District, which is Delta, Dickinson, and Menominee counties, is that we have the highest rate of increase in the state, 8 times higher than the state average. We have the highest test positivity rate, 13%. We have the highest death rate. So the 108th District is being disproportionately impacted by COVID. And one of the weaknesses that I will directly address is going to be access to on-demand testing and having quick results. I've been in close contact with our local public health department. They are feeling the stress. They feel understaffed in being able to manage their daily public health requirements, as well as managing the increase in COVID. So I'm very excited to work closely with our public health department and really get testing to the scale that it needs to be so we can get back to work and back to school safely.
My next question relates to executive orders, first by the governor and now by the Michigan Department of Health and Human Services. To protect public health, do you think it's appropriate for state government to control the comings and goings of its citizens, limit capacities in schools and businesses, and require the use of face masks? And if not, how do you propose we protect public health and minimize the spread?
Yeah, right now, those are what we have to manage this pandemic. We have wearing face masks, which has been overwhelmingly shown to be effective. We can engage in social distancing, which is shown to be effective. And so these are the types of things that we should pursue. Now, we're seeing that being addressed by Michigan Department of Health and Human Services, as you said. And we'll also see this being addressed by our local public health departments. So, again, the big weakness is adequate testing, having a fast response and testing not only those that are symptomatic but asymptomatic.
And you feel all of this should be addressed through executive orders rather than legislation?
No, it's not how it's addressed. The issue is whether it's addressed or not. So, you know, we've had the recent Supreme Court ruling on the executive orders, and again, that has a relatively narrow focus. So we'll see in the future what happens with that law. But right now, that is being managed by Michigan Department of Health and Human Services, which I think is appropriate. If the legislature wants to weigh in and offer other measures by which we can tackle this pandemic, obviously, I'm excited to see that take place.
Let's move on. There are 23 permanent House committees established by House leadership, from agriculture and appropriations to education and health policy. What are some of the committees you'd be interested in serving on and why?
Yeah, I think I would bring a tremendous amount of strength to the Committee on Education, as well as agriculture and energy, which deal quite a bit with environmental issues, and that's a strength of mine. But one thing that I'm really interested in is the Committee on Veterans Affairs, Military and Homeland Security. So some of my early work was looking specifically at Gulf War syndrome in veterans and the neurological implications of being deployed to the Gulf. And I spent quite a bit of time in the Gulf myself, as well as in the former Soviet republics and in Southern Africa. So I really want to bring that international background to that committee.
It's been reported that a crush of poll watchers and challengers are expected to turn out on Election Day, raising fears of voter intimidation. What are your thoughts on this, and how do we ensure that people are not deterred from going to the polls?
Well, you know, you've seen at some levels of government, some of our representatives have been calling for this. But in the community that I'm in, I really don't see that type of animosity. I think everyone supports open access to the polls and a democratic transition of power. So for me, in the community that I hope to serve, I don't expect to see that to be a problem.
Do you support no excuse absentee voting by mail?
Oh, absolutely, yes.
It seems increasingly difficult for our elected officials to work across the aisle to develop sound legislation. What are your thoughts on this, and what steps can be taken to get Democrats and Republicans working together?
Well, again, I think that plays on one of my particular strengths, which is drawing on where we have where we agree rather than we disagree, and particularly in the sciences. So I've been in contact with other legislators in the area and had some really good discussions about how we can move forward in regards to improving access to healthcare in this area. And so I look forward to working with them in that.
Folks often feel the UP's interests go unheard in Lansing. As one of only four UP representatives, how will you make your voice heard among the 106 House representatives that represent the Lower Peninsula?
Well, I appreciate the question. I think that's really important because I don't think getting your voice heard is simply by screaming a lot and making a lot of noise. I think it's about developing relationships, developing coalitions amongst different groups, and being able to work together towards common goals. And so my goal is not to go to Lansing to be a bully or to fight. My goal is to go to Lansing to work with others to improve the lives and the livelihoods of those in my district.
Well, you said your background is in agriculture. How do you bring that voice to Lansing? I know your district has a great wealth of agriculture. And again, farmers are typically a group that feel their concerns are not heard.
Well, I wouldn't say that my background is in agriculture. My background is largely in environmental science and the impact on human health. But what I think that I bring quite strongly is how we manage agriculture, how we can improve agriculture in the district, and particularly manage climate change. So farmers are feeling right now the very devastating effects of climate change with increased rainfall. And so that's something that we need to think about. How do we improve infrastructure? How do we improve the ability of farmers to manage excess rainfall?
You also touched on environmental work. Mm-hmm. How do we strike that balance between creating jobs and protecting the Upper Peninsula's environment?
Well, I don't think there needs to be a conflict there, right? So you're asking that question with the assumption that there's some type of conflict. But the economy in the Upper Peninsula is built on the strength of our environment. And when that's at risk, whether through water quality, poor fishing, a poor deer herd, then that impacts the economy and ultimately will decrease jobs. So we have to be able to find a way forward to develop while taking into account appropriate environmental measures.
Earlier, we were talking about being able to work across the aisle. Do you feel confident that you can work with your Republican colleagues representing the Upper Peninsula?
I am confident because I've already had those discussions. And I've been reaching out, and we've had productive discussions, again, about areas of joint concern and areas where we want to move forward together.
We have about a minute left, and I wanted to give you time to present a final statement and maybe make that appeal to your voters in your district.
Yeah, I think the voters have a unique opportunity this election cycle. They have two very, very different candidates who are standing to represent the 108th district. And I look forward to bringing the viewpoints of the voters and developing opportunities in the district, managing COVID so that we can go to school and go back to work safely.
Dr. Renee Richard, thank you for joining us today for this candidate forum on the 108th House District. I do want to remind you that Election Day is November 3rd. The Michigan Secretary of State and local city clerks are urging those of you that are voting absentee to get your ballot in now. But if you are voting on the 3rd, the polls will open at 7 a.m. and close at 8 p.m. Please do your part and vote. I'm Mike Settles. Thanks for tuning in to WNMU's Media Meet.
The preceding program was produced by WNMU-TV, Northern Michigan University Public Television, and studios located in Elizabeth and Edgar Hardin Hall.